and joining us on the telephone is Brenda Wineapple. And, you know, as we bring in Brenda Wineapple, Kat, I did want to say this is history in the making right now. This is just only the third time that there will be a vote on the House floor to impeach a sitting president of the United States. Richard Nixon resigned before it ever got to this point. The only other two impeachments that have been voted on by the entire House are Bill Clinton in 1998. In fact, I think tomorrow is the 21st anniversary of Bill Clinton being impeached. Yeah,
it scares me that you know that.
It happened on the 19th. Kat, I've been talking and reading and thinking about nothing but this for the last 2 months.
That's scary too.
Wait till we get into the conversation about Andrew Johnson, and you're going to see what we know. And of course, Andrew Johnson is the first president to be impeached in 1868. And joining us on the telephone to talk about the very first impeachment of a sitting president is Brenda Wineapple. Brenda Wineapple is the author of a number of books, including her latest, which is was not written overnight. This was a 5-year endeavor, which just happened to come out in time, called The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson, and The Dream of a Just Nation. Brenda Wineapple, it's our good pleasure to welcome you back to this radio station.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you. Things go on and on.
And we do want to dive in to the story of the first impeachment of a sitting president, right, Andrew Johnson, because people do talk about it and sort of pass it off as this illegitimate impeachment that occurred, which I know you take on that notion, and I agree with you on that. But before we get there, just as somebody who has spent 5 years in the history of impeachment, what are your thoughts about what's happening today?
I mean, it's stunning in many ways, and it's very sobering, and actually, it's disturbing because of the underlying allegations of abuse of power and obstruction of justice, and that to me makes this event and this impeachment vote so different from the Clinton impeachment vote, and much more like Johnson, because Johnson basically there was a law that he violated, but the underlying reason that he was impeached was because of, abuse of power and obstruction of justice. And so in a certain sense, about Trump and the Ukraine call and the sense that he is inviting foreign interference in an upcoming election for his own personal interests, that is, in a sense, the efficient cause for the charges of abuse of power, and then obstruction of justice is, it has to do with the fact that he didn't allow people to testify or documents to be investigated. So in that particular sense, that's very Johnsonian.
You know, coming in this morning, I was thinking to myself about all the presidential impeachments, and I'm including Richard Nixon, who resigned before he was just impeached. But I guess you could make an argument that the impeachment of a sitting president, let's just say four if we include Nixon, were pretty symbolic of their time. Richard Nixon, again, was the breaking into the Watergate hotel, the DNC offices. Well, this is a time that you have COINTELPRO. This is a time that you have Nixon's enemy lists. We're still on the tail ends, I guess, of J. Edgar Hoover, right? And what the FBI has done through the decades. If you think of Bill Clinton's impeachment for lying, and he did break the law, especially tampering with evidence and all these other things. But that was like in the midst of this cultural war that the country was going through in the 1990s. I guess with Donald Trump, is it like hyper? And I'm leaving out Johnson in a moment, because we're going to dive into that. Because you could say Johnson was the impeachment of Johnson was very much about what would America look like after the Civil War. With Trump, what would it be? Would it be a moment of hyper partisanship?
Well, that's what we're told. And yes, there's truth to that. But when we're told that, or when that is just discussed, it's discussed almost as if this has never happened before, hyperpartisanship. And that's why I think the Johnson impeachment and then trial is so interesting, because how can you, that was a time of hyperpartisanship. How can you say it wasn't? It was right after a civil war, you know, when partisanship actually led to the battlefield, you know. I mean, God forbid that would happen now, but nonetheless, my point is only that, of course, there's going to be a partisan aspect, inevitably, about impeachment. I think it, given the fact that we have political parties, that is part of, you know, what impeachment has to imply. It does not mean, though, that there aren't real constitutional and moral issues involved. And I think there were in the case of Johnson, and I think there are in the case of Trump.
And there's also a comparison to be made of our hyperpartisanship that we are experiencing today to the decade before the Civil War even began, the 1850s.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. The 1850s was what led up to the war, and there was, you know, there was so much acrimony between the North and the South. Excuse me. There's so much acrimony in political parties that it actually led to the development of a new party. The establishment of the Republican Party did not exist before the late 1850s, you know. So that's itself very interesting. And one could say that there may be the development of yet another party now out of what many consider to be the ashes of the Republican Party, since there are so many Republicans who feel disappointed, if not disillusioned and disgusted, by their party.
That would be very interesting. And of course, the Republican Party was born in 1854 as a new party because of the breakup of the Whig Party. And it was at the time the party to take on the slave power. Brenda Wineapple, and you know, look, it started in 1954. It had the presidency, 1854, had the presidency by 1860, which is pretty remarkable to think about how quick that all turned around. The impeachment of Andrew Johnson. This is an impeachment story that most people never heard of. And at one point until recently, I myself had never heard of why Andrew and understood the impeachment of Andrew Johnson. And then I just before your book came out, and then your book very much solidified my knowledge about this, but I started looking into it, and I was just amazed. It was, to me, I basically see it as one of the most important stories that I've never been told, the impeachment of Andrew Johnson.
Well, that's how I felt. And, you know, I began the book really from the same vantage point as you. I didn't really know much about this. And as I thought about it, I thought, how could I not know about the first ever presidential impeachment? How could that not be a major event if it comes after an assassination, the first ever, and a civil war? So that's why I decided to look into it. And it really seemed to me that the whole process, both the impeachment and the trial, were about the direction the country would take. So it was not a trivial moment in American history, quite the opposite. But for many reasons, the story had been sidetracked, suppressed, buried, ignored, papered over, whatever you want to say, and even in a sense burlesqued. It shouldn't have happened, that it was a mistake, you know. And in some sense, you hear that argument today, well, it's a mistaken idea to impeach a president. And, you know, I can understand why some people might feel that way only on the basis of it seems such a radical step. But then, of course, it's a solution. It's a proposed solution to maladministration, poor administration, an ill, you know, a president or civil officer who's unfit for office.
Just looking at the vote totals right now on the floor of the House of Representatives, which is voting on the rules over the debate concerning the impeachment of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And the time is about to run out, but these usually last, they say 15 minutes usually means a half hour in House votes, though we could see how that turns out. There's many members who still have yet to vote, but there is the first Democrat to vote against against the rule. We may see one more. Don't know there's going to be many more beyond that. But as it looks right now, it's 121 in favor of the rule and 109 against it. And as I say that, the numbers keep piling up. We do anticipate the rules to be approved. And once they are, they will move on to the 6 hours of debate concerning impeachment. We'll have to see whether or not there will be further procedural hurdles that the Republicans will throw up there. So, Brenda Wineapple, the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, when talked about, and we saw this occur when the three academics, the three constitutional scholars came to the House Judiciary Committee to talk about the history and constitutionality of impeachment. We still, even up to this day, hear that this was an improper impeachment in 1868 because it was over policy differences. It wasn't over an actual, you know, say abuse of power or doing anything that might, you know, come up to the line of illegal act.
Yeah, well, that's a very mistaken notion. I think Professor Turley was making that argument, and based really on poor historical record and a kind of canard or a kind of gossip, really, about the Johnson impeachment. It wasn't a question of policy. There were policy differences between the Republicans and Democrats then, just their policy differences now. And I think Speaker Pelosi made a very good point when she said policy differences are what will be decided in upcoming elections. And that's exactly what happened in the Andrew Johnson case. Johnson was also, like Trump, facing an election. 1868 was an election year, and in terms of policy, his policies were really voted down by the vote, the election vote, where Ulysses S. Grant took over the presidency, and the Republicans won the White House. You have to remember, Johnson was a Democrat.
But the Democrats didn't want him because he stayed with the Union during the Civil War, and the Republicans didn't want him either.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Democrats would have liked him, but they were also, you know, themselves disappointed, if not horrified, but what they considered, in a sense, his abuse of power, even though they backed him and they worked very hard to acquit him and make sure he stayed in office, they certainly didn't want to put him on the ticket because, ironically, they too had questions about his abuse of power, his use of executive action, for example, and also because impeachment, whether or not you're removed from office, impeachment is a stain on the presidency and therefore the president.
So just to get to the heart of the matter of the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, this is about racial equality after the war.
Exactly. And that's why I think it's a pivotal moment in American history, because you just had a civil war. You just had the ratification of the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery, which means you had 4 million people who had been enslaved who were now citizens, which is what the Republicans wanted them to be. And Johnson wanted to make sure that they were not. He blocked civil rights legislation. Okay, that's a policy difference. He vetoed civil rights legislation. The Congress overrode his veto. That's fine. But when he actually violated the laws of Congress and started to obstruct those laws and tried to prevent the execution of them, and what those laws had to do with was giving black people citizenship and enfranchising, giving black men the vote, then Congress had to take action.
And the law that Andrew Johnson violated was called the Tenure of Office Act, this obscure act that on the face of it does not look like it's about racial equality. But what it was is, if you we see it today, if a president picks a cabinet member, Senate has to confirm that nominee. What the Tenure of Office Act said was, if you fire one of your cabinet people, then you also need us to confirm that firing. And what, and this is really being driven by the radical Republicans, Thaddeus Stevens of Pennsylvania, who had the Underground Railroad go right underneath, I think, his house or office in Pennsylvania. And he's one really driving this process. And what they wanted to ensure was that Andrew Johnson did not get rid of Abraham Lincoln's cabinet.
Well, yes, and in particular, there was one man, his name was Edwin Stanton, and he was the Secretary of War in the cabinet. He had been appointed by Lincoln. He was still in the cabinet under Johnson. Johnson had never dismissed him, which probably was Johnson's mistake, because Johnson really hated Stanton, didn't do anything about it, and the House and the Senate knew that Johnson wanted to get rid of Stanton, but they wanted to protect Stanton because Stanton was protecting the military, and it was the military that was sent to the South or kept in the South to protect black men and women and white loyalists who were Republicans and who were being slaughtered, really, on the streets of the cities and in the countryside even before they got the right to vote. So Stanton protected the military protected the citizenship in the South, and Johnson fired Stanton after that law was passed. So it sounds a little complicated, but the way it's come down to us was, oh, the tenure of office, it was a silly act. It was later found to be unconstitutional that a president should be able to fire people in his cabinet. Fair enough. But the fact is that it was a law, and a violation of the law puts the president above the law. In other words, the president can't decide which laws he likes and which laws he doesn't like.
And yeah, I mean, this is such an important point. And there's this really dramatic moment with the firing of Edwin Stanton. And as you indicated, it's the military that is occupying the South that is overseeing these changes that are supposed to come. So the military is very important in this story. Edwin Stanton was probably the closest of all the cabinet members to Abraham Lincoln.
They were very close friends. That's right.
And when he was fired by Andrew Johnson, he barricaded himself in the building of the War Department for 3 months and refused to leave. Imagine that.
Yeah, he didn't leave. Right. That's exactly right. Because he knew he had the backing of the Senate and he wasn't going to leave that office because it would have been illegal. And if he left the office, then in a sense, he would have been giving it up to Andrew Johnson. So you're right. He barricaded himself in the office and the Senate backed him in barricading him and protecting him. Basically, the Senate wanted to protect Edwin Stanton and protect, as I said, the people of the South, the black people who were being slaughtered, and the white loyalists as well. So it was, but it was awful. I mean, it really was awful. If you think about, there you have the Secretary of War, the man who, with Lincoln and Grant and Sherman, had actually helped win the war, now, in a sense, a prisoner in his own office.
Brenda Wineapple, there are now enough votes to approve the rules for the debate on impeachment. Again, that will occur probably much for the next 6 hours. It's 223 to 194. Two Democrats so far have voted against it. I suspect it will be the same two Democrats that voted against the procedures about a month ago or so concerning the impeachment inquiry process. Brenda Wineapple, when they come out of this, and don't know how long it's going to be, but it'll probably be relatively soon. We'll have to let you go. But I do want to ask you, because once they impeach President Donald Trump, what we all anticipate, it's going to go to a Senate trial. Of course, there was a trial for Andrew Johnson. Do you know how much Bill Clinton's trial was modeled after Andrew Johnson? Do you think that is going to be the template that even today they're going to work off of?
I think to a certain extent, and when the House and Senate discuss an upcoming or a possibility of a trial, they always go back, they advert to Clinton. I think the rules that were put in place for Johnson or the procedures became the blueprint for Clinton, except probably in the matter of the Chief Justice presiding, because in the Johnson case, the Chief Justice wanted to take a very active role. And in the Clinton impeachment case, Chief Justice Rehnquist wanted to sit back and really not do very much, which is exactly what he did do. So it'll be very interesting to see what Chief Justice John Roberts decides to do and how he decides to respond to the Republican majority and Mitch McConnell in the Senate. So we don't really know what they'll decide.
And the significance of the trial of Andrew Johnson and the final vote, remember, you need two-thirds of the senators to vote to convict in order to remove from office. They were one vote short of actually convicting and removing Andrew Johnson from office. And if he would had been convicted and removed, the next person in line to replace him, there was no vice president at the time. It was the pro tem of the Senate, who's a man by the name of Benjamin Wade, who was a radical Republican who would have become president. And there's a whole issue about Benjamin Wade. Apparently, a lot of people also didn't like him. But it makes you have to think of what happened after the Civil War, the rise of Jim Crow, the rise of the KKK, what we'd eventually call the nadir of race relations. Of Reconstruction, which had all this great hope and promise at the beginning, how it might have been different if Benjamin Wade was president rather than Andrew Johnson.
Different. Exactly. And that's in some sense one of the reasons why Johnson was acquitted, actually. People were so afraid of Benjamin Wade because he seemed so, from our point of view, we wouldn't even say radical, we'd say progressive, and that he wanted to take the country in a very different direction in terms of racial relations and in terms of, you know, the working class as well. So he had, and in terms of women, I should point out, because he thought women too should have the vote, and that was a bridge too far.
And then there were...
No, I was just going to draw a line to today as well. The outcome of this, you know, and surely the Senate is not going to convict Donald Trump. That, too, was going to have political ramifications and global ramifications for decades to come. It is going to shape the way in which both our government works, but also, I think... You know, if you look at, I've been trying to tie together, if you look at the rise in white violence attached to Donald Trump, the pushback, and is this another nod, wink, wink to his base? We can do whatever we want and get away with it. So.
Well, let's hope not. I mean, I'd hate to hang up and leave you on that kind of note. I mean, I understand completely what you're saying. And, you know, the fear is, I think, very justified. And I think many people share, myself, I share that fear. At the same time, there is an election. And one hope is that even if...
Brenda, why not? We're going to have to pause there.
Okay. The previous question is ordered. The question is on adoption of the resolution. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the noes have it. Gentlemen from McGovern.
Madam Speaker.
Gentlemen, request a recorded vote. Those favoring a recorded vote will rise. A sufficient number having risen, a recorded vote is ordered. Members will record their votes by electronic device. This
Don't leave
will
us,
be
Brenda Wineapple.
A 5-minute vote.
Okay, so the first vote there to approve the rules what passed. Only two Democrats voted against it. So that's significant, very much like we saw in the dynamic with the procedures that were voted on several weeks ago. Again, the final vote on the two articles of impeachment, even the vote on each of the articles could be different from each other. But usually the way people vote in the rule is how they end up voting for the final bill. Again, it doesn't have to be, but very good indication now that you're not going to see maybe, you know, 6 to 10 Democrats voting against impeachment now. I think that's a good sort of predictor at this point from what we see. Now they're voting on agreeing to the resolution, which I think is just another more procedural hurdle that they will have to do before they actually move on to the debate. So we actually have a little bit more time before. Brenda Weinoppel, you're still with us. I hear you in the background.
Yes.
Appreciate
I am
that.
Still with you. I just want to just finish that point because I was going to say, I agree with you about the negative possibilities globally and domestically if President Trump is acquitted. But at the same time, I also feel I would just want to turn that around a little bit. We don't know what will come out in the trial and how that will affect public opinion. And it's very possible that the effect will be such that it will change, not maybe the base, but certainly the undecided voters or the voters who might go to the polls energized to remove Trump from office next November.
But do you think, I mean, the polls in terms of supporting or opposing impeachment have, you know, hovered pretty much at the same place for quite some time now, 50%. Do you foresee something coming out in the trial that we haven't heard over the last, what are we at now, 10 weeks of conversation and dialogue and leaks and hearings?
Well, we really don't know. There are still people like John Bolton and Mick Mulvaney sort of waiting in the wings. I think that Senator Schumer was very cagey when he released the letter to Mitch McConnell saying that he wanted those witnesses to testify and the State Department to release documents, because even if McConnell and the Senate votes against that or blocks that, that goes into the public discourse. People are going to discuss that. They're going to say, why isn't he, you know, why isn't Mulvaney or why isn't, you know, Bolton testifying? They may be pressured to testify. So who knows? That's what I mean about there's a possibility we'll hear the same thing. This morning in the Rules Committee, we had heard the same, you know, issues rehashed about procedure or about, you know, Ukraine got the money, so it's not really important. You know, so there will be that. But I think it could go in a very different direction in the Senate.
I mean, and just one last note, I think, on the global impact. We already look like, so I travel quite a bit, and, you know.
How are we looking, Kat?
We look like buffoon. I mean, when you are in any other country and you, like, I try not to talk, right? Because people go, oh, you're American? Yes. And the first thing invariably that people say is, I'm sorry. And they're talking about the fact that Donald Trump is our president. But that then leads to further conversations. You know, people don't understand how we're tolerating this. But when you think about all of the ways in which he has embarrassed this country, and I'm certainly not a patriot, but I mean even things like, you know, I don't know, pulling us out of the Paris Accord or, you know, all of these things that make us look like idiots globally. I wonder, like, one more thing, right? One more thing of this magnitude, what it does to America's standing, I'm putting that in air quotes, as a global leader. How can we lead anything?
No, but there's that's absolutely true, and I completely agree. I was talking just yesterday to some people who are connected with Al Jazeera, and what they were telling me is that, for example, in the Arab world, so many people are mesmerized, really, by the whole impeachment process because they've never seen anything like that, and it doesn't exist necessarily in other countries. And even, as I said, even if it fails and we expect in the Senate, you know, to acquit Donald Trump, there is a kind of procedure, there is a process, there is a debate that goes on that I think is worthwhile having so that it doesn't look like the country will capitulate necessarily to a poor choice of president, because it can happen.
Brenda Weinoppel, this vote is going much quicker than the previous one did, so we may have to interrupt you again. And then I think after this vote, they will proceed to the debate on the floor concerning impeachment. But before that occurs, just following up on what Kat Brooks is talking about concerning precedents being set, Kat and I earlier talked about how we may be entering this phase of impeachments, where impeachments become more common here on out. Republicans aren't wrong when they say there are plenty of Democrats talking about impeachment long before the story of Ukraine came to our attention. And then we also remembered that even Republicans, Rudy Giuliani, just before the election of 2016, was talking about already impeaching Hillary Clinton if she won the presidency.
Right.
And I think it was hard for either of us to believe that if Hillary Clinton wasn't president right now, that she wouldn't be going through the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were people who wanted to impeach George Bush. Absolutely. But it didn't get very far. I would say, to go back in history, the same thing happened with Andrew Johnson. There were people who wanted to impeach Andrew Johnson pretty much starting in the summer after he took, you know, the oath of office the previous spring. But moderates and many Republicans kind of put the brakes on it.
Yeah, they voted several times before, right?
Yeah,
led again by Thaddeus Stevens.
Well, not necessarily in that case. There was somebody else that was leading the charge, and people like Thaddeus Stevens thought, wait just a minute. I mean, these people like Nancy Pelosi are vote counters, and they're not going to do something that is suicidal. And I think that there's that to be considered. It's true, the time between the Clinton and this impeachment upcoming, the Trump impeachment, is a very short time, given how, you know, much time passed between Johnson and Nixon. But I think to me, and I could be completely wrong, that's tantamount to, you know, trying to frighten people. Oh, you can't vote for impeachment because then it'll become a president.
All right, Brenda Wineapple, we're going to have to leave it there. Let's go bring up the floor. Thank you again. Brenda Wineapple is the author of the book, The Impeachers, The Trial of Andrew Johnson and the Dream of a Just Nation.